Good morning and welcome to Catholic Views. I'm Jerry Klein. Thanks for joining us today on the program. A bit of a heavy topic. We're going to talk about suicide prevention. Very important topic too, though, and lots of ways that you can learn how to be more aware and to maybe help somebody. Justin Phelan from Catholic Family Services joins us for that conversation. Gene Young will have news for us in just a bit. First, the readings for this Sunday. Renee Leach with the first and second reading. Deacon Roger Height with the gospel.
A reading from the book of the prophet Isaiah. The Lord God opens my ear that I may hear, and I have not rebelled, have not turned back. I gave my back to those who beat me, my cheeks to those who plucked my beard. My face I did not shield from buffets and spitting. The Lord God is my help. Therefore I am not disgraced. I have set my face like flint, knowing that I shall not be put to shame. He is near who upholds my right. If anyone wishes to oppose me, let us appear together. Who disputes my right? Let that man confront me. See, the Lord God is my help. Who will prove me wrong? The word of the Lord. A reading from the letter of St. James. What good is it, my brothers and sisters, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Can that faith save him? If a brother or sister has nothing to wear and has no food for the day, and one of you says to them, "Go in peace, keep warm, and eat well," but you do not give them the necessities of the body, what good is it? So also faith of itself, if it does not have works, is dead. Indeed, someone might say, "You have faith and I have works." Demonstrate your faith to me without works, and I will demonstrate my faith to you from my works. The word of the Lord.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Mark. Jesus and his disciples set out for the villages around Caesarea Philippi. On the way, he asked his disciples this question: "Who do people say that I am?" They replied, "Some, John the Baptizer; others, Elijah; still others, one of the prophets." "And you," he went on to ask, "who do you say that I am?" Peter answered him, "You are the Messiah." Then he strictly ordered them not to tell anyone about him. He then began to teach them the Son of Man had to suffer much, be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the scribes, be put to death, and rise 3 days later. He said this quite openly. Peter then took him aside and began to remonstrate with him. At this, he turned around and, eyeing the disciples, reprimanded Peter in turn, "Get out of my sight, you Satan. You are not judging by God's standards, but by man's." He summoned the crowd with his disciples and said to them, "If a man wishes to come after me, he must deny his very self, take up his cross, and follow in my steps. Whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it." The Gospel of the Lord.
And now with a look at news highlights from this past week from the Bishop's Bulletin, here's Gene Young.
Thanks, Jerry. In the news this morning, the Holy Smoke Car Show was a success for the Office of Vocations and the seminarians it aims to support this summer. The event is sponsored and run by the Knights of Columbus and the Diocese of Sioux Falls' Vocations Office. Thanks to the involvement of support of so many who pitched in, volunteered, and those who attended, the event generated this year over $36,000 for seminarian education. More than 1,000 people attended the event, and over 90 volunteers pitched in to make it happen. You can read and see more about the Holy Smoke Car Show in the October edition of the Bishop's Bulletin in homes across the diocese right now and online at www.sfcatholic.org. In other news, churchgoers around the United States once again mark the commemoration of the 9/11 terrorist attacks with moments of silence, special prayer services, and masses. In Brooklyn, New York, a Mass for Fallen Heroes was celebrated at the Co-Cathedral of St. Joseph on September 11th. The Mass followed a procession of firefighters from across the country who first gathered at Ground Zero in Lower Manhattan, where the twin towers of the World Trade Center once stood. They marched in single file across the Brooklyn Bridge, carrying 23 ceremonial flags of the New York City Fire Department. Each flag represented one of the 23 firefighters from Battalion 57 in Brooklyn killed in the line of duty at the Trade Center. The journey from Ground Zero to Brooklyn served to symbolically bring the brothers back home, said organizers. The procession included a ceremonial flag for every New York City firefighter killed that day and an American flag in remembrance of all who died that day. Led by fire trucks and motorcycles, the procession went past several firehouses on the way to the co-cathedral. Official ceremonies took place at the sites in New York, Virginia, and Pennsylvania, where four hijacked planes crashed 17 years ago, claiming the lives of close to 3,000 people, including the 19 hijackers. A new Catholic elementary school in the Archdiocese of Baltimore will honor Mother Mary Elizabeth Lang, who founded the Oblate Sisters of Providence, the first religious community of women of African descent, and opened the first Catholic school in the United States for black children. Baltimore Archbishop William E. Laurie said recently that the school will be called the Mother Mary Lang Catholic School. In April, the Archdiocese announced plans for the first new K-8 school in the city in nearly six decades. The school was initially to be named after the late Cardinal William H. Keeler, former Archbishop of Baltimore, but the plan changed after the Pennsylvania grand jury's report detailed what it described as his criminal inaction against an abusive priest when he was a bishop of Harrisburg. In 2013, when Swedish telecom equipment and software giant Ericsson decided to renovate its Piscataway, New Jersey campus, it forewarned employees to plan on working in a paperless office. In the process, the company was ridding the offices of file cabinets, whiteboards, file folders, and related equipment. For longtime worker Laureen Larry O'Donnell, it led her to ask a colleague, "What are we going to do with all this stuff?" The co-worker assured O'Donnell that most everything would be recycled, but when O'Donnell saw dumpsters overflowing with books, papers, and much, much more, the Hunterdon County woman led a recycling effort few workplaces could arguably match. Nearly 5 years later, more than 125 Ericsson employees have rescued, collected, cataloged, and sent off more than 180 tons or 360,000 pounds and donated the items to nearly 250 nonprofits throughout much of New Jersey, two other states, and three foreign countries. Some items have wound up at schools and offices in the Diocese of Metuchen, New Jersey. With a look at the news from this past week, I'm Gene Young reporting from the Bishop's Bulletin Newsroom.
More evidence that one person can indeed make a difference.
Absolutely true.
All right, Gene, thanks for that. Let's move on to our interview. This morning on Catholic Views, we are joined by Justin Phelan from Catholic Family Services. Justin, a counselor with the CFS. And Justin, I know one of your passions, you have many passions in terms of helping people, but I know one of them is suicide prevention. This is September when we kind of focus on that as a, I think as a nation, really, it's suicide
Correct.
Prevention month. So I guess timely to talk about it a little bit.
Yeah, and I am thankful for the opportunity to discuss this important topic. You know, one of the only times that it gets much attention is when someone famous does this. But now, you know, it really is demanding local attention. Because it's happening on a local level. And I think that really warrants talking about it.
Yeah. There's I know so many factors that go into the whole a problem of suicide. Not everyone approaches it from the same direction, do they? I mean, there's multiple things that lead a person to that point in their life.
Correct. You know, suicide is the ideation part of a suicide event is generally very brief. The crisis part of it is generally very brief. It doesn't last weeks, probably doesn't last days. But people that successfully complete suicide are struggling and they're in pain. And what we know from the survivors of suicide attempts is generally, right after they made the attempt, they wish they hadn't.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we have no information from people who complete suicide, but we know that the crisis part of the event is generally very short in nature, and that is why proper identification of the risk factors and the signs is so vital.
And I know that those that are around people that end up, you know, committing suicide, taking their own life, they feel like they should have been able to do something. And most of the time, from what I understand, the probably not the case.
I think, yeah, that's correct. I think it's, you know, we can look backwards at these problems and think, oh, the signs were there and we should have seen it. But generally what happens is there's so much information leading up to the event that we don't recognize as risk behavior. For example, excessive drinking or erratic behaviors or impulsive behaviors or acting out behaviors, missing school. Sometimes the nature of these events leads to criminal activity, things that are out of the ordinary. But individually, these don't look like risk factors in and of themselves. And you don't really know until the event happens that all of those antecedent behaviors were really leading up to the event.
Yeah, it's that. It's the old hindsight thing, right?
I mean, you
look backwards and you can see things that you know may have made sense had you known.
Correct.
Yeah.
And that is really why I'm so passionate about this subject in the work that I do here or in maybe other communities, working with schools and businesses. I see the risk factors very clearly. And no one is immune from this. Because it really, it's a lot like addiction. It doesn't discriminate. You know, anyone that has stress can be at risk.
Yeah. And you, sometimes you look and you talk about some of the famous people that really grab our attention. And sometimes we, of course, don't know their whole story. We don't know what's going on, you know, behind the scenes. But we're stunned sometimes when we see that someone who we may have thought a lot of, maybe respected greatly, but we don't know that whole story, do we?
We don't. And, you know, the media does not really help us too much. The sensationalism really does not draw the right spotlight to this problem. I would say being famous is a risk factor. and being normal is a risk factor.
Isn't that something? Yeah, yeah. So living might be a risk factor.
Yeah, living is a risk factor. And, you know, I certainly don't believe that everyone is at risk, but I do believe that a lot more people are at risk than we care to admit. And just going to draw the listener's attention to a 2017 statistic put out by the state of South Dakota. In 2017, we had the highest rate of completed suicides ever in our state's history, and that number is 192.
Wow.
That's too many.
Yeah.
And the reason for those high numbers is probably varied, but, you know, substance abuse rates are certainly on the rise. We have more people probably not having stable employment and things of that nature. But I would say from my perspective, that substance abuse element is key. People accidentally overdosing on pain medications. Those are certainly part of that 192.
Yeah, and sometimes probably hard for the authorities to even determine. Sometimes was it intentional? Was it accidental? And you know, where does it fall in that?
And keep in mind too that when someone is in pain, suicide in their mind is the answer. Mm-hmm. It is the only way in their mind to end the pain. And those issues come up every single day in the work that we do here at Catholic Family Services. And it's important to be on the lookout for those things.
Yeah. And just to know, wherever you are in that range or wherever you think somebody else is in that range, there's help available. It's never wrong to seek help.
And it's never wrong to ask the question. You know, the training, one of the trainings that I do is called QPR.
Yeah.
And QPR is really the simplest way to address this issue because it's easy to do. Anyone can do it. And a person should never feel guilty for asking somebody else the question, are you suicidal?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you might get snubbed if it's your child or your spouse or a coworker. But it might also open the door for that person to talk about it, and talking about it is vital.
Yeah. It can be that simple, can't it?
It really is that simple. And I don't mean to make it sound overly easy, but it is not difficult to to make that intervention. And I know that, you know, parents of loved ones or maybe school administrators don't think it's that easy, but truly it is easy to ask the question.
It doesn't mean you're solving the problem.
You're not solving the problem.
But you're opening the door to solving the problem.
You're creating an opportunity for the at-risk person to say, thank you for caring about me. I have been thinking about this, and now you've given me the platform or the opening to talk about it.
Well, and is it, you talked about this, how the thought process for somebody who's contemplating suicide is the crisis is actually sometimes short-lived. If you can just, you know, shift the tumblers a little bit, maybe that helps.
It, you know,
by asking the question is what I'm saying.
In the mind of the at-risk person, you know, maybe they've lost their job or they've been kicked out of school or they've been arrested or there's some activating event in the mind of that person. And what we know looking backwards is those events are manageable. But in the mind of the at-risk person, they're not.
Mm-hmm.
So they're developing their own story about how bad this problem is. And so they are really catastrophizing those events. And, you know, I'm not saying that every event is small, but certainly no event is so large that it would warrant someone having to take their life.
We come at some of these things, Justin, from certainly in the religious world, in the Catholic world, I'll say specifically, from a particular perspective of who we are as created beings of our Lord. In a way, that thinking doesn't even enter, does it, when a person is in that crisis mode? That's sometimes we might say, gosh, they were a person of faith. Why would they do this? But in the crisis, that's probably not even a factor for them.
That's not generally how people think.
Yeah.
The thinking is generally considered fairly irrational, although in the mind of the person, it makes total sense.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, you know, just to kind of get to ground level here, you might say, in the mind of the person, I'm going to complete a suicide because it makes total sense in my mind. It's the only way that I can think of ending this pain. The reason you don't want to ask the question in a real complex way, such as you're not thinking of doing something stupid, are you? Kind of camouflaging the question is because in the mind of the at-risk person, it's not dumb at all.
Right.
It makes total sense.
Yeah.
So for our listeners, you know, the sake of simplicity, the real way to ask the question is just to be very blunt and ask that person, are you thinking of hurting yourself? Mm-hmm. Or do you have thoughts of killing yourself? Because in their minds, that's the easiest way to get to the answer.
Right, right. I want to spend a little time talking now about this. You alluded to this, the QPR, the question, persuade, refer. I know that you are trying to help others learn this method, mm-hmm. to be aware of it and to understand you know, how they can be a part of this. I know you're doing some work with schools. I know you're doing some work with clergy, with others. Talk about that process a little bit and how that can help probably any of us who might find ourselves dealing with that kind of a situation.
QPR was developed by a psychologist named Paul Quinet in the Seattle area. And it's a lot like CPR. And it's a three-step process. The biggest problem that people have is asking the question, and that because we think we will create someone to be suicidal, but that isn't the truth. The truth of the matter is, if you ask the question, you create opportunity for hope. And so, what I've been doing is conducting trainings, kind of all up and down the interstate, to groups that want to learn about it. And you know, I just completed a week-long series with the Minnehaha County Jail, trained 150 officers to do this. And I think they're very satisfied that now they have a tool that they can use that's simple to use, easy to follow. It's kind of no nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I do it is because I believe very strongly in the model. But I also believe that if we don't put the model in the hands of the people that can use it, we haven't really helped anyone.
Right.
So parents can learn it, administrators can learn it, siblings can learn it, clergy members can learn it. And it's hard to forget it once you learn it. Mm-hmm. You have to ask the question.
And there's so much, we see this kind of in every direction. The mental illness seems to be around us in a lot of different ways. Maybe it seems more prevalent in a way than maybe it did at one time. I don't know why that would be the case. Maybe we're just more aware of it.
We become much better at identifying it.
Yeah. And so the point is, any of us may find ourselves in a situation where we're dealing with somebody who is not thinking right.
Yeah. That period of not thinking right doesn't last very long. Mm-hmm. The problem is the suicidal person jumps to the conclusion that, you know, suicide is the way out, and they keep that to themselves.
Right.
And the risk factors are there for us to see. And you can even look at famous people who have completed suicides. The risk factors were there. A DUI, first, second, third, fourth offense, a divorce,
yeah.
Losing the custody of your children, losing a business, losing a job, having a fight with your spouse. Those are all risk factors. Depression, anxiety, a variety of mental health issues. Those are all risk factors in and of themselves. Maybe don't present you with heightened risk, but collectively they do.
I'm fascinated too that you talk about training those that work in correctional settings, because one might think you have to be, in a sense, in a relationship with somebody in a particular way to ask this kind of question, but you don't.
You don't.
You don't.
You can be a bystander.
Yeah.
Fortunately or unfortunately, I become very good at identifying risk. And that came through trial and error on my part,
mm-hmm.
seeking out the information that I thought was helpful. But anyone can do this training. And, you know, that's the biggest thing, is that's why I promote it. Anyone can do it. Anyone can learn it. And I would encourage our listeners to give us a call if you want to learn how to do it. In 60 minutes, you can equip yourself with the tools and the information to then make an intervention.
I like what you said too. It's kind of hard to forget it, because you know you right away think of CPR, QPR.
Yeah.
You know, QPR
and,
question.
And you know,
it helps.
CPR has evolved over time. My understanding of CPR is the only thing that you have to do now is chest compressions.
Right.
And that's how much they've learned about how to prevent a death.
Right.
I would equate QPR the same. You have to ask the question.
Right.
If you can't ask the question, then I don't know how much help you're going to be. But if you can ask the question, what that does is it opens the door for the at-risk person to make a different decision.
Mm-hmm. And it's... I will speak from my own personal experience. I've had a chance to ask somebody that question.
Mm-hmm.
It actually feels very good to ask the question and get the answer.
It does.
In my experience.
Yeah, I would agree. And a lot of us just are scared to ask it because we don't know what to do with the answer.
Yep.
And that's where the training is so helpful, because you learn, what do you do with that answer? You persuade them, mm-hmm. and then you refer them.
Exactly. And there is help. And that's the other thing that we need to know, is that there's help out there.
There is. And you know, CFS doesn't have all the answers, and you know, just like Avera doesn't have all the answers, Sanford doesn't have all the answers. We need everyone that's in the game to be present with us.
Yeah.
And the tagline of this program is called "Ask a Question, Save a Life."
Mm-hmm. We were talking about something else, and you gave me what I think is this great line, and I think it has to do a lot with all kinds of things that you deal with at Catholic Family Services. It's that simple. And it's that complicated.
It is. That's a great way to look at it. It is very complex.
Yeah.
These are not simple. We're not talking about simple depression here. We're not talking about generally one event. We're talking about a cumulative number of risk factors that can involve everything from a traffic violation to a divorce to losing a job to a major health concern. All of those things combined make this very complex.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do this a lot, it is, I wouldn't say it's simple, but it's easier to spot. And that's why I'm so passionate about doing the training, because
yeah.
I can help people to identify that risk.
Yeah. So, and again, it's available to anybody.
It is.
It's not, there's nothing, you don't need any specialized training other than understanding how this works.
Yeah.
And it can be done pretty simply in a parish, in a school.
Yep.
You've already been doing that.
If someone would call our office at 988-3775, I'd be happy to set up a time where you can learn about this. It works great in groups, you know, from 3 people to 50 people.
And it's, again, we were talking about this because we are in the National Suicide Prevention Month, but this is a topic that's around us all year round. It's not going to go away. We got to keep at it.
And you'll see it make news probably every week from now until April.
Mm-hmm.
That's really the high-risk time.
Why is that, do you think?
In the Midwest, you know, the winters are long. A lot of people suffer from just natural depression.
Mm-hmm.
The days are short, they're dark, they're cold, and that does something to people's minds.
Yep, yep. So even now, good to be aware of it.
It is. This is really the beginning of what I call the high-risk time.
All right. So much else going on at Catholic Family Services as well. You can find out information about any of the programs, any of the ongoing services, the counseling and the pregnancy counseling work that goes on. Check out the website. I know there's some information there as well for all the things that go on at Catholic Family Services. And I'm not sure if the QPR is up on the website or not, but if it isn't, we might get it there.
It should be on our Facebook page,
yeah.
But there's a number of other activities that we have. Tonight we start our divorce recovery group.
Right.
And we have a very full agenda for that, and we also, sign-up sheet is full.
Yeah. Lots of good stuff. Check it out, sfcatholic.org/CFS. You can find all the things that are going on at Catholic Family Services there. Justin, thanks so much. I know this is not exactly a fun topic to talk about, but I think really critical that we do.
It's necessary in the line of work that we do and the people that we're trying to help. This is a necessary discussion. It's ongoing. It's not just, you know, it needs to be an ongoing dialogue.
Yeah, absolutely so. So talk it up, share it with your friends. QPR is the method, and Justin's available to help you learn it. Again, thanks so much.
Thank you, Jerry.
Gene, as we enter the fall season, it always seems like there's a lot of activity, certainly at the parish level, but the diocesan level too. There's a couple things.
I can tell you that just from working with the Bishop's Bulletin, how much material we get in to promote during the next month's edition.
Yep.
A couple of items, though, from the diocesan level is Discipleship Day is coming up on September 21st and 22nd here in Sioux Falls. There probably is still time to be part of that, and that's a great opportunity. And also out on the horizon a little bit is Life is Good, the Respect Life Conference that's set for October 6th.
Both should be really helpful events, and I hope people will take advantage of those opportunities. That's our time for Catholic Views this morning. Thanks for being with us. We'll be back next Sunday.